Without a doubt, I think we have been gathering attention, but to your point, it's merely just these seem to be the suckers that kind of are giving their stage to these gentlemen. And I just wanted to, for a second, I wanted to actually pop this up, and I don't know, I hope you gentlemen can see this when I do pop it up. If you Google in Google News, Libertarian Party Convention 2024, the top results coming up are no, Trump and Kennedy aren't libertarian candidates. You also get something to the effect of how many more parties can Donald Trump intellectually corrupt? Donald to speak at pro-MAGA libertarian convention. Trump should debate RFK at the libertarian convention. What I'm noticing, and I've actually read through a lot of these, what I'm noticing is there's no actual mention of libertarian positions. There's no actual mention of libertarian candidates even. And of course, considering that we have not as yet selected our presidential and vice presidential candidates, Dr. Belay is still running for that position. You're still running for the LNC at large position. So do you think that it's a combination of perhaps the wrong choice in inviting these folks and the fact that we have not as yet selected our candidates? I think it seems to be a double whammy, because in leading up to the convention, you can't go anywhere and say, for example, it'll be Trump, RFK, and Dr. Belay. You can't say that right now because Dr. Belay has not as yet won the nomination, correct? So do you feel, either one of you can answer this, do you feel that it's a combination of having our selection process so late in the cycle, and also
yes,
okay, go ahead, Doc.
I mean, so I have to be politically correct about this, obviously, but it's like at our hospital, right? You listen to the CEO of the hospital, and they make their decisions, and you have to accept the decisions, and sometimes the decisions have faults, and sometimes they work, and sometimes they do not. You have to listen to, I don't have behind the scenes information, but to your point, yes, the candidates have received zero publicity as a consequence of this. And yes, I do think the candidates should be, or the nominee should be picked long before. We're dealing with a massive amount of difference between finances. I mean, these gentlemen have, $100 million. I mean, the libertarians will raise a few million dollars if we're lucky. I mean, if we don't start getting the name out and developing who our candidate is, the values which we espouse, and begin to preach to this, and this is why we should be at least in the running. That why should someone listen to us if we're sort of like the small person in the room, and all of the oxygen is about to be sucked out by a massive organization that has more money than we could ever imagine.
Right. It's like, I have to admit, and I know both you gentlemen have to be politically correct, for lack of a better term, but I failed to see the logic in this. And I've spoken to several people within the LP, some within the Mises Caucus, some outside of the Mises Caucus. And it's always been the same sort of response. Like, we don't understand the value of this. Now, were there a three-person debate even, RFK, Trump, Libertarian nominee, then perhaps.
It would be great.
Then perhaps it made more. Even then, it's a little bit doubtful, right? But I would
say this, and I don't mean to interject, yeah, John. But sure. if that were to happen, the nominee should be able to. That person should know that they are going to debate long in advance. You don't walk into a test and grab a pencil and say, "What's the subject matter on?" Correct. I mean, you have to prep. All of these persons who are debating don't sit there and just walk into debate. They prep and they prep and they prep. And so, yes, consequent to this, the libertarians could end up looking like fools should Trump turn around and say, "Oh yeah, sure, I'll debate somebody." I mean, okay, that, how much time have you had to prep? How about none, right? Or very little, but and not by necessarily the people that need to prep you. And so that's where I think we would fall short right now, even at this late state, in this late state of this game. If either of these two gentlemen said, "Let's debate the libertarian candidate," you're left with a week to prep, and that's not much time.
I agree. Tony, what about, 8 to, if you want to comment on what Dr. Belay just said, but also this notion that all of a sudden, as soon as this was announced a week or two ago, I believe, about Trump and RFK coming to the convention, all of a sudden you had everybody jumping out of the woodwork offering to debate these people. Dave Smith, for example. Follow him, listen to, watch his podcasts and everything. He was the first one. Hey, I'd be happy to debate those guys. Well, why are you? You're not running to be the nominee. You're not running for any office. So why would we? It seems to me like we're eviscerating our candidates before they even have a chance to get up and show their mettle, show their worth, and have a chance to represent libertarian philosophy. If you want to comment on that, Tony.
So I appreciate prominent libertarians jumping in and saying, hey, I would love to debate Trump and RFK Jr. One, Trump's never going to do that. Trump dodged debates against Nikki Haley. He's not going to debate Dr. Belay or RFK Jr. He's just not. He just agreed to two debates with only Joe Biden, with very, very strict guidelines that were negotiated 2 months in advance of the first debate. Right. I know some people have been saying, oh, this is going to happen. We're going to have a debate. No, that's not going to happen with Trump. Trump is coming to give a monologue and leave. That's what he does. Right. But I appreciate prominent voices like Dave Smith. I know several of our presidential candidates. I don't know if you have Dr. Belay, but I know others have stepped up and said, hey, I would love to debate him. Yes.
Oh, I'd love to debate. Sure.
Yeah. Right. Put his feet to the fire. Now that leadership has given us the lemons that are Donald J. Trump, let's make lemonade out of it. And make him look as bad as we possibly can, because he's one of our enemies. I really wish that Joe Biden was if one's going to show up, let's get the other one there to make him look bad too. But in all honesty, the Libertarian National Convention is supposed to be our pep rally. It's not right. Like the RNC or the DNC have debates at their conventions either. It's not the place for it. It's a party to celebrate us. It is the coronation of our presidential and vice presidential candidates every 4 years, every 2 years. It's something right. a little closer to business. But I really wish we could have a convention like that where we could be celebrating us and not being right. constantly interrupted by members of the duopoly coming in and giving us monologues about how great they are and how we need to join forces with them so the news can pick up that as the soundbite.
Right. And what about the timing of the convention? I know you guys touched on it very briefly, but something else, like I've interviewed most of the candidates for the LP presidential nomination, Dr. Belay included, long form, to get their thoughts and understand them. I've asked each one of them, would you prefer almost a primary type system to get the nomination? Or do you actually prefer the quote old school process of the nominee coming out of a floor vote at the convention? And I think to a man, they all said they prefer the current LP system as opposed to a primary or a caucus system. Do you feel that way as well?
I think we're at a point where we're not quite mature enough to have that primary or caucus system. And I think that we're probably a generation away from being that mature. I really hope we're not. I really hope that we have the groundbreaking candidates in the next two or three cycles that bring it quicker. I really hope that. World set free in our lifetimes, I'm ready. There aren't enough libertarians voting in a lot of states. You know, every state is different, how people are registered, how right. people vote in primaries. If people can vote in primaries, New York, most years I couldn't vote in a primary because my party didn't have a primary. In 2019, 2020, we did have a primary. In 2020, we had a presidential primary in New York, and we voted. And the person who won our primary did not win our nomination, didn't come close to winning our nomination. In fact, the person who won our nomination wasn't even on the ballot. There was only one candidate on the ballot in New York in 2020 as a Libertarian on the primary ballot. Anyway,
right.
And we're not at a point where we should be. I mean, we're 50 years into this. We should be at this point, but we're not. Right. And I think it's going to take another generation before we are at the point where we are. Right now, the greatest way for the greatest amount of libertarians to get their voice is at convention.
Okay. Dr. Belay, do you think that we should be holding, say, this convention? In this case, we should have held the convention, say, towards the end of 2023. So what kind of
time? I mean, well, for many reasons. I mean, first and foremost, the general public has very, I mean, even now, as the Libertarian Party has become a bit more mainstream, I would argue, than, say, a few years back or a few cycles back, people still have not heard of our candidates. But it also, a much larger issue would be that of monetary. I mean, we have a hard time raising funds, and it takes funds. And I think if one was to start earlier, you can become more comfortable with the candidate that you would choose, and be more apt to donate. And one would have the funds at the right time in order to start spending the funds to become a bit more public as we get closer. As it stands now, we're going to find our nominee at the end of May. And now we just have a few months to get in front of the news. And that's going to be exceedingly difficult. I mean, November's going to be here before we snap our fingers. And that's not much time to have a nobody become a somebody.
I agree with you, and that seems to have always been the case. Unfortunately, even when we had, as a party, our greatest success with Gary Johnson, he did not have, you know, he was building buzz outside of the nominating process of the LP, right? But it still came very late, and he did not have the benefit of having any chance at debating.
Look at all the polls right now. I mean, all the polls. I mean, so. You have Trump, you have Biden, you have FK Jr., and you'll see West and Stein, okay? So I had the good fortune of putting my name on the California ballot. Everyone else had kind of missed the boat on this. I just got lucky. It was how we got on the ballot is just sort of serendipitous. But having said that, if you look at the numbers of which libertarians drew, was greater than either one of those two candidates. So if we had a libertarian candidate in all the national polls right now, we would at least be showing some degree of success, as opposed to not having anyone on most of these polls. And so, you know, so consequent to that, it looks like there are no libertarians running, but all of a sudden we're just going to suddenly pop up on a poll and expect to begin to increase. I don't think that's going to happen as readily as we'd expect.
Now, that's an interesting point. Now, when you say, now we know that there's inherent bias in any poll, right? So I always have this conversation with folks who are perhaps not as versed in statistical analysis, right? So a lot of people will say, I hate polls because how can a poll of 300 or 400 people tell me what the whole country's thinking? And I always say, no, the math for that is actually very accurate. The bias is who you include in the poll, who the 400 people you're questioning is. The math of 400 people representing 330 million people, that math has been proven for centuries. That's the old student's test, right? But I mean, to your point, if no one's talking about it, or if the poll's even question, if the poll question is, who do you prefer, Trump or Biden? That, you know, that's a poll, right? How are you going to rate in that? If they don't mention your name in the question, how are you going to rate if you're not part of the multiple choice? So is part of that solution having, do you think, either one of you, and I know that as libertarians, we hate passing unnecessary laws, but do you feel there's some sort of necessity for either like a unified ballot access law so that each state, for example, or do you feel that there's any sort of uniformity? I mean, we did have the case where Trump was disqualified from two state ballots. Whether you think he should or should not have, very clearly, the ruling that came down on the federal level prevented state sovereignty. So in that case, we did have people saying, well, here's a guy who should be on the ballot. We feel he should be on the ballot, even though the Constitution.
No.
Right. I mean, it did seem to allow states to disqualify him based on their interpretation of the insurrection clause. But it turned out that you can't. So I don't know, Charles or Tony.
I would be for all for campaign finance laws. Absolutely. 100%. But to somehow interject into state sovereignty, I would disagree with. I mean, we are all promoting decentralization. I think it's up to this party to get together and unify and begin to come together and coalesce and actually present a candidate that America wants to vote into office. And whether we do it early or what have you, but to start asking government to change laws, this is completely antithetical to what it is that we espouse.
Okay. Tony?
So before I want to answer your question, and then I want to come back to sure. the other subject. I agree with you, Dr. Blake. No matter what, whether you're somebody who is a constitutionalist who believes in states' rights, or you're an anarchist, or you're a minarchist, no matter what, none of us think that the federal government should be butting their noses in who local people want to vote for. Having said that, I'm not a lawyer. So please don't take this as legal advice. What the Supreme Court did in forcing Trump to be on the ballot, I don't know. That sounds like a precedent to me, a legal precedent that maybe our lawyers could exploit. Let's play the game. Let's play the game by the current rules so we can get in and change the rules. I did want to note that I do agree that we should have our conventions. In the odd number year preceding the presidential year, and we used to do that. Mm. From 1979 to 1991, our presidential nominating conventions were in the odd number year before. And then starting in 96, we had our nominating conventions in the same year, around about the same weekend. Usually it's Memorial Day weekend.
What was the reason for that? Can you let us? Is there any way you can let us know the reasoning behind that, or was it just decided?
I have no idea. That was just a little bit before my time. I started paying attention to the party right 96, just as Harry Brown was on his rise. I would also argue one of the reasons that Gary Johnson was so successful in 2016 is because that was his second time as a candidate. He was our candidate in 2012, so he did have some residual name recognition, and that helped. Now, it's not the first time we've had this happen. Harry Brown had it happen in 2000. That was certainly a different political climate, a combination of, wow, these two candidates that the duopoly are putting forward are terrible, and oh, wow, these libertarian ideas sound good, and I've heard of Gary Johnson. He was on my ballot 4 years ago. Really helped us in 2016 reach those numbers. We didn't quite reach those numbers in 2020 because Jo Jorgensen didn't have that recognition, but she did respectably.
Well, Jo Jorgensen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but to your point, Gary Johnson also had the benefit of being a Republican governor for two terms. So he had that name recognition, and having done a great job as a Republican, not as a libertarian, that also helped them, if we're being sort of upfront about it. But also, Jo Jorgensen did well because, and this kind of leads into a lot of the talk about what's happening, is Jo Jorgensen, I was reading an article today, Jo Jorgensen was blamed by Trump's campaign as costing him the election in 2020, where she beat the spread in, I think, four swing states that went narrowly for Biden. So Trump literally came out and said, hey, if she wasn't there, I'm the next most libertarian president in the world. They would have voted for me. I'm not saying he's right or wrong. I'm saying that was his thinking, his justification among many others for losing, right? So I think Jo did very well for herself, right? But so now we come into this cycle, and it seems almost as if, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a political guy. I'm not involved like in the political aspect of libertarianism. But from an outsider looking in, doing the Dopey podcast, it seems to me that the theme of this libertarian, this iteration of the Libertarian Party is, we don't want Joe Biden to be president, which is a noble theme, but it doesn't come attached with, we don't want Trump either. We don't want RFK either. It seems to be, we don't want Joe Biden to be president. Am I off base here, either one of you? Do you think I'm overreacting to this, or is this something that is tangible? You guys are out on the campaign trail for your, you know, how do you feel about that?
I think you're correct in that, just by some of the statements that have been spewed. I'm not going to point fingers at anyone, but I would agree with you. I think that the party seems to be leaning more conservative than Democrat. I think we have to be very careful so that we not align the Libertarian Party movement as a MAGA movement, in which case we will not have the publicity that we want, and potentially could hurt the party in the long term, because there are many things that that the MAGA party espouses that are not what libertarians believe in. And you can hear that from any podcast or convention that one attends. Some people are vehemently against this, and some people don't have much of a problem, and some people are for it. I just happen to be that guy that's kind of like, I don't believe in what the guy espouses, so okay, whatever, you can talk all you want, and okay, all right, good luck. I'm not sure how that's going to play out at this convention, so I just hope we're not made the fool of, and we don't have news coverage that's bad for the Libertarian Party.
Tony?
I mostly agree. So I'm running for LNC at large this cycle. Last cycle, I actually ran for LNC chair, and one of my platform planks when I was running as chair was to support the Big Tent. We have always been, the Libertarian Party has until 2022, and still some, it's just the tent's grown a little smaller, but we've always been a big tent party. We attract people. We have traditionally attracted people throughout the first 48 to 50 years of our history, almost equally from the left and the right, because there are people on the left and the right who really do value liberty. I, for one, came from the Democrats. I was a Democrat before I was libertarian. I mean, that was 147 years ago. But still, we all are pulling in the direction of freedom. And, left-wing, I think it was John McAfee who said this, and maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was somebody else, but the duopoly, the Republicans, Democrats, are just two wings of the same bird.
Yes.
That's right.
And then he said something about poop too, but that was John McAfee for you. But in all seriousness, they are. They both want to control government. I could go into all sorts of Harry Brown quotes. Harry Brown was the presidential candidate that brought me into the party. But basically, Democrats and Republicans do the same thing. They still want to control your wallet to do different stuff. They just want things controlled in their particular way. We want everybody to be able to live free. And Trump and Biden are equal enemies in that. Biden happens to be the incumbent, and there's always a little more ire against the incumbent.
Correct.
And yes, the party has leaned a little bit more to the right in the last few years, but there's still a lot of us who came from the left who still believe in those libertarian ideals surrounding social justice and surrounding healthcare freedom. Those are still in the party, and I'm here to not let us forget that.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good point to bring up, that it does seem to be that there has been a rightward tilt recently. And what's interesting is that I don't see the counterbalance as much. Like if you're leaning more right towards in a particular policy position, let's say immigration, right? That you don't see the counterbalance of, well, we're still retaining our our individualist view of gay rights or healthcare or anti-lockdown or free markets or whatever. But you're right. It is a little bit interesting to see that little bit. Another comment I wanted to make to something you said earlier, Tony, and both you and Charles can comment, which is we had Larry Sharp on around the time of the decision to force Trump back on those state ballots. And he was very happy. And I said, well, how can you tell me how you justify that? He said, very simple. If they can put him back on and force states to put Trump on, that means they can force New York to put me back on the ballot to run for governor again. So to your point, Tony, you know, Larry was viewing it that way. He says, hey, you know, it's not ideal, but if that's the game, let's play the game and use it to our advantage. Start filing lawsuits to put force our candidates because you're causing the disenfranchisement of a certain chunk of voters in any given state. So that's interesting. Okay, so there's a quick question that came in from Back to the Stone Age, a luchador apparently, and it says, what is the function of the Libertarian National Committee? What are their duties for the Libertarian Party? So I guess, Tony, that question might be for you. Like, when you hear about the LNC, what is their job function? Like, what is it? What is their role within the party? Are they like a steering committee? Do they do something along the lines of make executive decisions? What is the function of the LNC?
So, you know, I'm glad that this question is asked because a lot of people misunderstand the LNC and what it is. And what the LNC is supposed to do. The LNC essentially is the board, the board of the National Party. The LNC exists to provide governance and leadership. So what's that mean? That means that, first of all, from a personal standpoint, we have to uphold and promote the principles and philosophy of libertarianism on a broad level, on a broad national level. Which means, especially in the at-large position, the regional representatives are a little different. But we need to see it from a national level. What's going on nationally, from a liberty standpoint, and make sure that we're speaking and living those principles and philosophy. More to the point, though, it's our duty to manage and coordinate the operations, staffing, finance, resources for the National Party organization. We're there to support the affiliates. Sometimes that's financially, with outreach, with training, whatever that is, in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. And on a side note, while we're talking about it, the District of Columbia is the only non-state in the U.S. that has a local Libertarian Party, and I would love to see us set up affiliates in the rest of our territories where they so desperately need it. We're kind of unique in that, in addition to, you know, we have to provide governance and support to that organization, we're necessarily an educational organization. We sometimes have to teach people about what libertarianism is. What is a libertarian? We have to do that, and we have to do it all over the place through outreach events, being at events. A lot of that is handled by state affiliates, but there are some things that the National Party does. Like showing up at Freedom Fest, showing up at CPAC, showing up at Pork Fest, for example, those big, right, big events, but also through social media. And there's other means that, you know, I can't really think of right now off the top of my head. But at the end of the day, we're the governing body of the party, and it's our duty to uphold the bylaws, promote our platform, and make sure that our nominated presidential and vice presidential candidates are on ballots everywhere people can vote in the United States. Or as close as we can get as possible. I know New York is really going to be close on that one. They scare me.
I live here. They scare me. So I don't blame you.
You know, as somebody who was actually chair of the New York Party for a bit, it is hard. It is hard to get on the ballot. It is hard to keep continually fighting the state.
Yeah. My ballot story is always voting for Larry Sharp. I had to write him in last time. And the funny thing is, when I handed in my the ballot handwritten, they didn't know what to do with it. They stared at it for like 2 hours, and they were just holding it up like it had some communicable disease, like this. I think it's one of Larry's favorite stories, and they were just like, I don't know. And they had to call a supervisor and they didn't know what to do with it. And finally, this, you know, this little old lady who's been probably working at the polls her whole life, you know, volunteering, comes up to me and she goes, son, why don't you just vote for somebody on the ballot? It'll make life easier for all of us. You know, and I said, no, I'm not going anywhere until they finally sealed it up, put it in, you know, properly handled it. But that came from someone like myself who was just determined to vote for Larry. I can imagine someone who had a legitimate interest in voting for a Libertarian candidate, even to write one in, the physical trouble and impediments they have to be able to do something like that. Dr. Belay, have you had any trouble getting on the ballot anywhere, or like, has your campaign been able to get your name on ballots relatively easy, or do you have any horror stories about ballot access?
No, I don't. I mean, no, because this has all been primary stuff. I've not run for office preceding this. You know, I mean, I've not had the same experience. I mean, look, we're in Louisiana, which is completely, it's more of a jungle primary. So getting on the ballot down here is far different than up on the East Coast. You guys have a hard time in New York. I mean, Louisiana has been relatively simple. You know, it's just a completely different experience down here.
All right, good. Let's shift gears a little bit here and actually talk a little bit about the party and some of the issues surrounding it. I'm going to ask each one of you in turn to give me the number one issue that you think the Libertarian Party should be addressing. And that if both of you are successful in your efforts, what will you do to address that issue? So let's start off with Dr. Belay. Dr. Belay, if you were to get the presidential nomination of the Libertarian Party, what's your number one issue that you will be attacking with vim and vigor?
I think we have to get the message out of who we are and what we espouse. I mean, right now, that no matter whom I speak with and no matter the location across this country and what party they're affiliated with, people listen to our message because they're tired of a two-party system. They just don't realize. I mean, when I speak, mention to some people libertarianism, they begin to look like, you know, somewhere out in left field, as if we have these strange values and we're trying to espouse these, you know, these theories that are completely irrational and it would not positively affect their life. I think it's a matter of bringing, like Tony said, bringing people into the tent and let them realize that this is mainstream information. It's just a matter of, we are a party that actually wants to go back to being what America once was, as opposed to being the uniparty that spins and has the sort of the omnipotent control over all of, you know, every portion of our lives. And I think we have to get the message across. You know, right now, the party is fractured, and a family that stays together and eats together and shops together and fishes together and does everything together is actually exceedingly powerful. And right. So I think we need to take this, you know, this fractionated party and bring them into amalgamate everyone, so that everyone realizes that what we are simply trying to do is make this country better by a smaller government, by a fiscally responsible a government that's not going to control all aspects of our lives. And I think if we can promote this message, we will begin to draw people in and in and in. And if we can't win now, maybe we will bring more people in. And if we can stay holding the same message and promote liberty, we will see the party grow and grow and grow, and financially we'll do better. And consequently, this party will begin to actually seek offices. We'll get smaller offices. We'll begin to build a base. We'll have a good solid base, a good foundation, and we can build from there. I mean, I think the role of the person running for office on the federal level needs to be able to bring people together, both right and left, attract Democrats, attract Republicans that are completely disenfranchised with the current situation, which I know there are a ton of people like this, persons that are vehemently against Trump that don't want to see MAGA Republicans. And then you have persons that think Biden is just, it's been a wash for the past few years. These, right. There are people out there. And if we can do that, this party can grow. But we have to be the adults in the room. We have to, you know, instead of looking for conspiracy theories and looking for, you know, strange things to try to convince people that, you know, that this world is far different than what they imagine. They listen, we are the mainstream individuals. We are the adults in the room. We can help. And I think people are looking for that. I mean, I know they are. Not think, I know.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's one of those very peculiar sort of positions of the human condition. I know you're a medical doctor. Maybe there's a medical reason for this, but it's interesting that when people are polled on individual issues, right? Like when you ask someone, are you for higher taxation? Very few people want to be taxed more. Are you for someone running your life? very few people say they need a nanny state. But when you go down these things and you're like, they tend to poll more closely to the libertarian view. Most Americans tend to go for the libertarian view. But when it comes to the ballot box, when it comes to local laws, when it comes to your local school boards and whatever, that's when they turn away from the Libertarian Party. So what is that disconnect? Maybe Tony, you can
I think it's simple though. The disconnect is the fact that we are creatures of habit. This is why social media companies do so well following our data. I mean, you wake up, you go to the same place, you shop at the same store, you generally buy the same clothes. I mean, we're creatures that we generally follow the same religion that our parents had taught us. I mean, everything about us is for the most part, we are just in step with those persons before us. And very, very rarely does one actually change or redirect. And so I think that's where the problem is that, you know, mom or dad was a Democrat or Republican, so therefore I am, and I don't get out of my box because it's a safety zone issue.
Right. Yeah. No, the habit is part of it, but like we have seen demographic shifts politically, right? Whether it's a special coalescing around a special candidate, like say with Obama, you know, that he was able to galvanize.
Transcend,
right? JFK, despite all his nonsense, was able to grab the youngest generation of voters and convert them to Democrats. I don't think people appreciate what a shift in politics, the JFK, the whole Lancelot era, that kicked off, what was it, almost 40 uninterrupted years of Democratic rule in the House of Representatives? I mean, it was just unheard of, right? So, Tony, what do you feel about that? Do you feel like the Libertarian Party needs to adjust its approach, not its message necessarily, but its approach? I mean, Dr. Belay is like, hey, we're creatures of habit. Is there a way to break that politically, or how do we do that?
So I previously said that one of the things that I think that that the National Party needs to do as part of its function is to support state affiliates and to support candidates at every level. Clearly, the National Party is charged with supporting strongly the presidential and vice presidential candidate. But we have 50 state affiliates, each of whom almost always runs a gubernatorial candidate, each of whom usually runs several House of Representatives candidates.
Right.
And many of whom run local candidates. In Pennsylvania in 2021, more than 200 libertarians won in their local offices just because they signed up and ran. 2023 was the first time I voted in Pennsylvania, and we still won a lot in Pennsylvania. I want to say we won like 70 offices statewide,
right.
but I don't know that number off the top of my head. And the reason is that in some of those offices, there was no one else running. The libertarians who show up at their town halls, libertarians who show up at their school board meetings, get known, and then people see the name and recognize the name, not necessarily care about the party. That's one of the great successes of the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party. Now, Pennsylvania is a little unique in that there are literally elected offices for everything here. There's more elected offices than just about anything else. But in New York, we identified a lot of those offices too, and we won some of them back in 2019 and 2020. So one of the things when I get to the LNC, I want to support affiliates and I want to support candidates. I can't extricate those two from each other. I mentioned wanting to see affiliates built in the territories. I can't do that without people in the territories who are willing to be my accomplices. Like, I can't start the Libertarian Party of American Samoa if there aren't enough American Samoans that want to start a Libertarian Party of American Samoa. But what I can do is make sure that they're receiving the message of libertarianism, making sure that we're supporting affiliates that want to grow, making sure that we're supporting candidates. We used to have something called the Frontier Project, where we supported state legislator candidates and town council candidates on the national level with literature, with aggregation of fundraising, with a lot of those resources, and the National Party is still doing a lot of these things. They offer a website template. There are affiliate help, and continuing that and strengthening that is what I think we need to do as a party.
Do either of you feel that perhaps the Libertarian Party at times talks above its intended audience? And what I mean by that is, are we too often, my partner, William Del Pilar, will say this all the time to me. He's not a libertarian. He's a conservative, or as he likes to call himself, a conservatarian. You know, he's one of those. But he always says, you guys, the Libertarian Party, you talk too philosophically. You don't talk where people are willing to listen, if that makes sense. Do you feel that that's the case, that at times we as libertarians, we talk about too intellectual things, or the things that we like to preach about aren't necessarily framed in the way people care about? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Sure. our ideas of liberty, can we come up with practical examples? Do you think we fail to come up with practical examples of what we could do for people day one to increase their liberty?
Yes. I mean, look, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you know, I mean, if we are so liberty minded and, you know, less taxes, et cetera, then why are we not the party that businesses just come to hand over fist? I mean, if we're going to decrease taxes, where are the major corporations that want to support us? Outside of, you know, the Koch brothers that I was listening to earlier on one of these podcasts, right? It's like, you know, where, I mean, yes. I mean, and you also have to frame the conversation in a manner that helps people. I mean, how are you going to, you can't speak so esoterically to a soccer mom who simply wants to have, you know, children do well in life, want to go to school, want to have a white picket fence, etc. I mean, you know, the idea is, how do we frame this so that persons realize that they're actually, they will have a benefit out of this? I mean, the other party seemed to frame it quite well. I mean, and I think that's where we fell short.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Doctor, that it's interesting because, for example, one of the reasons I was drawn to someone like Larry Sharpe, to someone like Spike Cohen, and it looks like we may have lost Tony, but is that they were able to personalize this to people. You know, like, this is how your child's education can become better, can be improved for them, right? Because we're going to take control away from the federal government, away from the Department of Education, and give it back to parents. We're going to allow school choice. And yeah, maybe vouchers aren't a pure libertarian position, because that's still state involvement, but it's an improvement over mandating your child's education, deciding where, when, and how your child will learn. So do you think we need to champion those types of issues? They're very concrete examples, right?
So we've been in debates, and I don't know what state this would be, but someone brings up vouchers and another libertarian would say, this is completely, you know, against what libertarians stand for. We don't want any of that. That is, so, I mean, I think, you know, part of what the other parties have going for them is that they make concessions, and in Libertarian Party, it's like, you're not libertarian enough, so that is not something that we can do. But that's what would actually bring people. And the whole idea of saying, wait a minute, you can't be in our party because you're not a full libertarian, is exactly what does harm to this party. We need to, like you said, we need a big tent. Everyone who wants to come in, by all means, let's bring you in, as long as you can sort of work within this framework, so to speak. And I don't mean to speak out of turn. Other people obviously would probably say this is entirely not the case, but that's part of the party, why the party's not growing.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and Tony, you could jump in. One of my standing jokes is, if you have two libertarians in a room, the only thing they can agree on is that the other one is not a real libertarian, right? Like, that's a running joke. We all get a slight chuckle at that, right? But it's one of our problems, and I'm guilty of it too. I'll be the first one to say, like, my first inclination is, if someone is 90% aligned with me in my libertarian views, I'll focus on the 10% they're not, right? Maybe that's human nature. Maybe I'm a miserable human being. But I've been catching myself lately trying to change the way I approach that a little bit. So, Tony, do you agree with that as well? We're not meeting people where they need to be met in terms of voters, and in terms of maybe, A, unifying our message to what Dr. Belay just said, in terms of, given the example of vouchers, yeah, they're not a pure libertarian solution, but they get us there as a first step towards perhaps completely free market education, but maybe school vouchers are a first step there, even though we recognize it's not the final destination.
So I have always been a pragmatic libertarian. So maybe not on vouchers. I'm not a personally a proponent of vouchers, but I get it. I get that that's a better direction. It's moving in the right direction. You know, where we see reductions in tax. No, we want to see it eliminated. But I'm not going to die on the hill that I'm not going to say this isn't an improvement when it is for us. It's a move in the right direction. I think sometimes, and it's not every libertarian, and libertarians that are successful at messaging do not get caught in the weeds, and they put things in terms that everybody can easily understand. But and then there are some libertarians that like to get into foreign policy and economic policy and which school of economics are you a fan of? And that's not something the average voter cares about.
Right.
We're an educational organization. So in some respect, if we want voters to care about that, it's up to us to bring them to us, not to just spout off these big ideas without education. We do need to be talking to people where they are. And like I said, successful candidates and successful state affiliates are doing that.
Mm. Where do you think, is there a model that either one of you have seen on the state level where libertarianism is being implemented in each of your views successfully and more pragmatically, perhaps, that can be used as a model for the rest of the state affiliates? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but is there like somebody that you feel does it right and they're like, hey, they're doing a great job. Maybe all of us can try to strive towards that.
I can't say in the state of Louisiana, so I mean, from a state level. Tony, I'm sorry.
No, Dr. Belay, go ahead.
It's fine. We both had.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I can't say in the state of Louisiana, no. I mean, you don't have many. I mean, you know, in many other states, you may have far more libertarian candidates than down here. This is, you know, Republican-Democrat territory through and through, right? I would like to see it. I mean, sometimes you see persons that actually want to bring government down to some manageable size, and I would applaud that, absolutely. I mean, you know, but we don't have those Masseys down here in the state of Louisiana. We don't. I mean, you know, I hate to use him, but he's a, you know, being a Republican. But no, we do not here. In Pennsylvania, you guys have far more.
Tony? Yep. Looks like Tony might be stuck a little bit there. Okay.
There he is.
I mean, I think that you can look, first of all, if you want to know what libertarian thing to do, look at what New York is doing and then do the exact opposite. That's going to pay off for you every single time. From a state affiliate standpoint, the ones that are messaging the best have those states where they have to fight. New York is messaging really well because they have a state to fight against. California is really, for the most part, messaging well because they have a tough state to fight for. Whereas New Hampshire doesn't necessarily, from a state affiliate standpoint, message the best because, you know, it says right on their license plates, live free or die. I think it's ironic that you have to pay for that license plate, but it says live free or die. Right. But, you know, from a freedom standpoint, I would say New Hampshire from a government standpoint, they have a huge state legislature, but at the same time, that allows people the representation. And now I think it's big enough where everybody in the state gets a turn, but there's literally 400 members of their state ledge, and it's what, the sixth smallest state. It's a really large state legislature, but also states where you have a lot of rural areas. I live in a relatively rural area. Yeah, we have a government, but I rarely interact with them. We're living freer in these rural areas because we don't have a government breathing down our throats. And I think if the whole government would just stop breathing down our throats like my small town government does kindly, then I think we'd all be better off.
Yeah, definitely. It all sounds reasonable. And at the end of the day, sometimes when I put my head down at night to go to sleep, that's one of the things that drives me crazy. It's like I've yet to find someone, or very few people, that when you sit down and talk to them about libertarianism, are rapidly against you. Those are rare people. Like the pure socialist among us rarely exists that will say, no, I hate that. I want them to take more out of my pocket. I want them to be more involved in my bedroom. I want them to decide for my kids who, you know, very few people in my experience, even in a state like New York, have that position. So again, I always struggle with this dissonance. And I know Dr. Belay said, hey, it's a matter of habit. But I wonder at what point habit trumps self-interest to the point where, you know, like, hey, just because I've been doing something wrong and perhaps self-injuriously all this time, what's the tipping point? What's the tipping point? For the life of me, I would have thought Trump and Biden and Clinton would have been the tipping points for a lot of people to say, let's try something different. Let's experiment with this Libertarian Party. But again, it seems like that inertia of just doing what you've always done is still has too strong a hold on people, I think.
I would argue, though, Big John, that that this country's, I mean, it's coming to a boiling point. I mean, that's look, persons like myself threw their hat in the ring, consequent to the fact that you are completely, disenchanted, disenfranchised, just seeing that the majority of the public is not wanting to accept either one of the two major nominees as president. I mean, you know, the persons that I speak to are not like just Joe Blows off the street. These are persons that have good jobs, run big organizations. They're not pleased with the current situation at all. And they're looking for a third choice. You know, that's probably why RFK is polling so well, because he's just thrown his name in there. I mean, if one of us had a gazillion dollars to throw at this race, we'd probably be doing one hell of a lot better. You know, I mean, I know people want another choice. It's just a matter, like you said, it's a matter of messaging. And of course, with that messaging, in order to get it out, we need some dollars.
Yeah, dollars, and I think opportunity as well. The opportunity and this is why I think we have, as time goes on, we have a better opportunity because of alternative media. Like the days when you had to depend on one of the three networks to give you airtime. I mean, yes, that's a great plus if you can get it, but it's not necessary anymore. So I think, what do you guys think about the possibility of, say, having a libertarian network or a libertarian?
I think it would be good. I mean, but you know, these networks, while there are means to get your name out there, I think they do add some degree of credence. I think they give you some clout. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with the clout, having seen what I've seen in this traveling across the country and et cetera. I completely align myself with all the other candidates when it comes to being shut out. But I think when the general public sees a major news organization cover someone, it gives clout to a person's candidacy, regardless of being able.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially with folks that are not as politically involved, like to the quote average Joe out there.
Right.
The fact that you're on ABC, NBC, or CBS, while you may still have distrust of them and CNN and MSNBC, whatever, there is something to be said of, well, so-and-so made it to that platform. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like journey to get there is almost like a competency test or a litmus test to say, are you a viable candidate? Because you are grabbing their attention. So I think to that extent, it's helpful. But to your point, in terms of putting a seal of approval on a candidate, I think that's out the door. Those days are gone. Like the days of the New York Times making an endorsement and having it matter, for the most part, is over, I think, you know, but just the fact that the Times is talking about you, that might be a different matter. Tony, I don't know. Do you have something you want to add to that?
He may be stuck.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll continue until Tony gets his. Tony, can you hear us?
There he is.
Can you hear us, Tony? Okay, so I think Tony may be having a little bit of a issue there with the Wi-Fi, but that's okay. We can continue. All right, so I want to wrap this up by seeing if I can give both of you the opportunity to close out and tell us a little bit more about your plans in the near future and how you guys hope to get elected to the positions you're seeking. So why don't we start out with Tony? Tony, give us your campaign pitch and why you deserve to be on the LNC as an at-large committee member. Okay. Let's take Tony off for a second and go to Dr. Belay, because it looks like Tony's stuck a little bit. Dr. Belay, same question to you. Give us your campaign, best campaign pitch, and tell us why you deserve to be the Libertarian Party nominee for president.
Best, we'll see. But look, I've met a lot of wonderful. I've met a lot of wonderful people over the past few months, traveling around the country. You know, I've got into this race. I'm a simple person. I'm a physician. I've worked my entire adult life trying to help other persons. I have become completely sickened by the current state of political affairs in this country. I don't think it's fair. I don't want the duopoly or the two-party system to continue. I think there needs to be third party. I think there needs to be not only just libertarians, but there should be innumerable parties with persons giving their opinions so that this country could be a better place. And I'm not simply advocating for libertarians to be, you know, at the top of the pack, although this is what these are my beliefs. I have a team that's worked exceedingly difficult to go from nowhere to now doing fairly well in this election cycle with libertarian. You know, I think I can get along with others. I know I can get along with others. I am, for the most part, a centrist. I believe in states' rights. I think that I can bring persons into this party. I definitely know I can bring Republicans, and I know I can bring Democrats into this party. Those are most of my friends, and most of my friends actually align with libertarian values. They just have never been given the idea of libertarianism as a third party in which to choose, just because, you know, down where we are in the South, it's just not as large as perhaps up on the East Coast. So, you know, I think I could do a lot of good for this party, and I plan to do so regardless. Whether or not I receive the nomination, which I hope I do, I still plan to stay in this game and try to attract people to this party and work at grassroots level and try to build a base, because I do believe in a strong foundation. But I think where my true gift is that I believe in, you know, shooting for the long ball. I mean, I know what it takes to get, you know, from point A to point Z and all of the alphabet in between. And so one does not get from, you know, from at the bottom all the way to the top. And so I understand that this is a pie in the sky type effort, but I also understand that it's going to take a lot of hard work, and I plan to stick in this game for quite some time thereafter. You know, so thank you, Big John.
Oh, and thank you, Dr. Belay. And for those that may not be familiar, Dr. Belay entered the race late, relatively late. And as he said, he's a political novice. He's a medical doctor who just wanted to make a change, wanted to get involved to make a change. And that's very inspirational. He's not a professional politician, ladies and gentlemen. So when he says he's trying to make a difference, he truly stepped in. And, you know, when you consider he's also a physician, you know, he's got that sort of workload, caseload on his mind. For him to be doing something like this is truly admirable. Dr. Blake, thank you so much.
Thank you
for your efforts on behalf of the party. Tony, you're back, thankfully. And now give me your campaign pitch on why you should be elected to the LNC as an at-large member.
Yes, and apologies for whatever was going on with my connection. Okay. No idea. Technology. I have been a libertarian for a very long time, both philosophically and administratively. I've worked with state parties. I've worked with the national committee on national subcommittees. I've planned conventions. I've done outreach. I've been a candidate. I've done all these things. I've done so while maintaining this relatively steady volume and tempo in my voice. I've been a unifying force in this party for several years. At a time when we need that unifying voice in our party, when we need somebody who knows how to support a candidate, who knows how to support messaging, who knows how to support an organization, I implore you, please, please select me to be one of your LNC at-large representatives at the convention next week. Thank you very much. If you need to get in touch with me, you can find me over on Twitter. I'm at Tony4L4LP.
Yeah, and Tony, let me put that up for the folks so they don't forget that. That's Tony's Twitter handle, everyone. And Dr. Belay didn't get the chance to tell you, but if you want to contribute to his campaign or follow his campaign, go to Belay2024.com, everyone. All right, everyone. I thought this has been a fabulous show. I want to thank both my guests, Dr. Charles Belay and Tony D'Orazio, for joining us tonight to answer some questions and give us their thoughts on what's happening with the convention. It was a nice rambling type of show. We started the convention, talked a little bit about philosophy, and now we're talking about practical implications of libertarianism. So I thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you, Dr. Belay. Thank you, Tony D'Orazio. For everyone else, don't forget, you've been watching us on grumblingsmedia.com. If you want to see the replay of this, go to grumblingsmedia.com. Go to YouTube, go to Rumble, go to X, go to Facebook, go anywhere you want. You'll find us there at Grumblings Media, all one word, at Grumblings Media. Until next time, when you'll see us again, don't forget, this is Big John, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you both.
Thank you.